This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio or at venues around the city, and we get to listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes. And you never know, you might even find your next favorite artist or band or hear your next favorite song. If you like what you hear, please make sure that you rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Gogol Bordello. I'm Megan Suma, and I'm here with host Paul Cavalcante at WFUV. Paul, this is quite a different energy than we are used to in Studio A here. We got the pop punk, gypsy punk, rave techno, electronic vibes at 11 a.m. today.
And what's more is you're going to get Eugene telling us about it in his own musician brain way, because it is a nonlinear conversation. It's all about riffing. He jumps from topic to topic, but somehow it all gets pulled together.
Yeah.
And you just got to let him riff. So I hope that you'll be down for not only the amazing energetic music that's just going to explode out of your earbuds, but what Eugene has to say. Eugene Hoots, we're talking about, the leader and creator of Gogol Bordello, all that he summons, as I told him in our power hug walking out of the session, dude, you contain multitudes.
Yeah.
And there will be a book, and there is much more story to tell about Gogol Bordello. So let's hear it.
Yeah, let's listen to some live songs. What's the first track that we're going to hear?
So first up, it's Life is Possible Again.
Just when you think you heard it all and saw it all right through, don't you think that's suicide the only honest thing to do? When you shake out your coattail and you fill the holy grail, it's not your angle, such a way that life is possible again. Life is possible again. Yeah, 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 yeah. Shake out your goat's tail and you till the holy grail. It's such an angle, such a way that life is possible again. My life is possible again. Life is possible again. Life is possible again. Your life is possible again. The better, the sooner you smear a roll. But how can anything now ever be joyous after what happened? But the hope just one thing I do. The life of the beast, the crack is too narrow. It want to cut through you. Oh, just let it in. And you shake out your coattail and you tilt the holy grail. Angle such a way that life is possible again. Yes, life is possible again. Yeah, 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 yeah. And you shake out your coattail and you till the holy grail in such an angle, such a way that life is possible again. Life is possible again. My life is possible again. Our life is possible again. Yeah, 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 yeah. Life is possible again. Life is possible again. Life is possible again. Shake out your coattail and you tilt the holy grail. It's such an angle, such a way
90.7 WFUV, Paul Cavalcante, welcoming you to FUV Live with the legendary Gogol Bordello.
Thank you.
We have a great band in-house. Eugene Hoots has been the front man of this dynamic music organization for, oh, so many years.
A couple of years, yeah.
But you keep aging in reverse.
That's the way.
You've brought a gang of people in here.
Yeah, that's how we roll, yeah.
You're going to blow the roof off this place.
It appears to be the way.
Life is possible again. Gogol Bordello, live here at 90.7 WFUV. The new record is called We Mean It, Man.
Exactly.
And Life is Possible again, one of the key songs. We heard it performed live, and it is your prime directive.
Well, it's sort of a mantra.
The mantra.
Mantra that I remember from my grandparents, actually, who all went to World War II, and I grew up, you know, seeing wounds in their shoulders and thighs, you know. So it's a tangible memory right there for a child, you know. So, you know, and I remember them talking about that, you know, war is one kind of difficulty, but after the war, that's a whole another difficulty that nobody expects because, you know, it's like victory and okay. And now, like, supposedly new chapter begins, but it's a new chapter of another catastrophic difficulty and how much deep into their own bone marrow they had to reach to make that life possible again, and yet it was possible. So, I mean, considering, you know, the moment of history we're living in where, like, the world is pretty close to, I mean, it's pretty much in the middle of catastrophe in a lot of senses. And a war in Ukraine has been, you know, just, you know, there's no words to describe it. No, you will never get used to it. And I talk to my friends all the time there who are continuing their daily life and still have wit and, you know, humor to somehow persevere. And so, you know, all of those impressions kind of took me to writing the song where it's like, this is the song for when, you know, the victory is there. And yet you still need to reach really deep for another stage of perseverance and make life possible again. And luckily, as humans, we do have that ability to grow and grow new tail and heal together, you know, and still look into the future, even when you're in the middle of catastrophe. That's really what it's about.
Beautifully put, Eugene Hoots, not just in words just there, but in music that you'll hear on a new record. We mean it, man. There is no fencing here. And there's so much that you're laying down on this new collection of songs. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I mean, it is a collection, but it's also just a blast of what's on the top of our minds and musical subconscious of the band, you know. I guess in this particular album, we were kind of more concerned with bringing up some of the layers that were kind of more perhaps hidden in our matrix. Like, you know, live for years, we've been keeping our sound really modern with, you know, some subtle levels of electronics and electro. And somehow, I love that people never clocked it, but that's the reality of it. I mean, Balkan techno was one of our chief influences. And if you go to Gogol Bordello show, we kind of just film the crowd, for example, without filming the band, you'd be like, wow, am I at the rave or what's happening? It's like, yes, you're at the gypsy punk rave because those songs are so entrancing and so looped because techno was one of our original influences. We just kind of wanted to make it a different kind of techno, not uniformic, but having that entrancing element. People, you know, some people go their first time, they go like, oh, why is this song 10 minutes long? I love it. Wow. Or 15. It's like, what? Because it's gypsy punk rave.
And the original songs in their original form, I mean, if you want to deconstruct it, before there was any electricity, there were these musicians around some kind of a campfire making that kind of noise, and it was all about this entrancement, right?
Exactly. Well, ironically, I'm probably the only person who can trace, like, the genesis of Gogol Bordello into its... Because we all met in New York, you know, but before New York, everyone was already had a quite a biography in music and quite a discography in music. So people didn't know what I was really up to before. For me, Gogol Bordello was a kind of very post-punk, very post-techno, post-industrial, post-hardcore, post all these things that I was doing for 10 years before that, you know, in fact, even when the band was starting, on a parallel track where I was just so fed up with everything that was going on musically, I was like, okay, I'm going to start with Vibration of One String again and go back to, you know, Bonfire situation, like you were mentioning. But that was my personal kind of crusade, like, let's make it back to the vibrating note. But on a parallel track at the same time, I was starting a band with stack of synthesizers, still with a guy from a DHR, from Digital Hardcore Records, you know. So ironically, Gogol Bordello took off and I got known as a guy with acoustic guitar. But if that would take off, you know, nobody would ever hear about the guy with acoustic guitar. They'd know me as a guy with a stack of synthesizers. So what I'm saying is that there never been a separate bins for me.
Mm-hmm.
Those are, you know, kind of cross-pollination is the way. And on this album, it's kind of coming to the surface where all of the hardcore and punk and techno and electro and all forms of underground music kind of are amalgamated into
and
one
all
here.
The players yeah. come from so many different places. Can you give us like a roster of who yeah, plays what and where are they from?
Yeah, well, Pedro is from Ecuador, you know, and that's where he kind of takes his root of punk rock and hardcore, and which they have a very own school of their own there. And I learned a lot from Pedro as a DJ and just as a gurumatic kind of person who embodies all that. And so we connected in the early days, you know, via, you know, music like Manu Chao and The Clash and Mano Negra and all that kind of thing that is more of a Latin American, Mediterranean, you know, European network of punk rock bands.
Okay, so dot on the map, Ecuador. Let's yeah. keep moving.
Yes, then you know, Sergei was born and raised in Russia. You know, emigrated here in the early 90s, and he's got a one of the most interesting journeys of anybody ever, because this brother made his way from a symphonic orchestra pit into the mosh pit.
So you've got a classically
and
trained
never
musician.
Went back, yes.
Among the gypsy punkers.
Yeah, but which is kind of a really stunning journey, you know. And he brought a lot of classical kind of influences, which is one of my influences as well. I mean, I started with basically with formal musical training when I was a kid and successfully threw it all out of the window when I heard Joy Division, you know, and never looked back. But that's because, you know, Joy Division for me was like my, you know, I was at that time, I was actually studying bolero and playing bolero, you know, the Maurice Ravel famous piece, in an orchestra, mm-hmm. which is quite a drill. You
and
know,
your instrument was?
Percussion, yeah. Drums, oh, percussion, yeah.
You got to play the drums in bolero.
Yeah, of course. Here
Man.
It is. Here we go. So, yeah. And when I heard Heart and Soul of Joy Division, I was like, wait a second, that's my bolero right there. That is basically new bolero. It's with a massive groove and obsessive bass line. So I kind of switched into that, and Sergei and I still connect a lot on the classical music layer of things, and which is oftentimes confused by people with folklore. I don't know why, because I don't really see our band as any kind of folkloric entity whatsoever, because playing folklore is something very distinctly different from just playing. Folklore is something when you take old melodies and you write new lyrics to it. That's like closer to folklore. It's something that's more distilled and the form hardly varies. And as you hear, it's completely reinterpretation of everything. It's a It's like calling like Béla Bartók's string quartets folklore. Like, it's not folklore. Mm. It's a severe reinterpretation of inspiration taken from Balkan, you know, and Eastern European music. But it certainly doesn't sound like folklore. Yeah.
So we have put a dot on the map in Ecuador and a dot on the map in,
in
Russia.
Moving on with geography. So, yes. So Leo is from Seattle originally, actually. But, you know, Leo is a relatively new member of the band.
An American,
yes. But, you know, I think he has like passports to 16 European countries, because every time we go to tour in Europe, he's like, oh, I have a Polish passport. Oh, I'm applying for Czech passport. Oh, I'm doing getting my Swiss. I think he has a lot of ancestors over there. Not I think, I know. But I just don't know all the details. But then again, you know, considering that Leo is relatively new, I produced Leo's first EP, his first band, Outer National, back in 2004, I think. So he's been in a family and in vicinity of Gogol Bordello for all this time, basically, you know, and touring with us as a support act and many times. So there's a big family connection there. Gil is from Brazil. And, you know, Gil Alexandre, our bassist, he is from Minas Gerais, Brazil.
Wow.
Yeah, one of the lesser known parts and lesser but significant part. When I lived in Brazil in Rio de Janeiro, you know, Minas Gerais was a kind of a glorified part because they have all these proprietary blends of cachaça, Brazilian rum,
mm-hmm.
that somehow is superior to all the rums.
You can't make a caipirinha without that.
Yeah, you can't. And they have the good ones that, you know, that looks like something that was aged in a barrel for a significant amount of time and looks legit. Yeah. So, you know, after 6 years in Brazil, which I loved living there and kind of, I thought I'll never come back, actually. But when I did come back, I had to have some kind of, I mean, I still was kept making. I was still in Brazilian vibe, and so
Gogol Bordello could have taken a fork in the road and become a bossa nova band.
Not a chance. Not a chance of that. Bossa nova is a very kind of salon. Yeah, it's not.
It's chill.
It's not. Well, even it's just. I mean, music defies all the class, you know, margins and all that stuff. But bossa nova is not simply, this was not developed and originated and developed by people who come from the background anything similar like where we came from. Mm-hmm. We're all street cats who persevered and connected on a very particular frequency. Bossa nova is something very attached to a very leisurely kind of lifestyle, a leisurely upbringing.
Street cats, yeah, who persevere.
Yeah, I mean, so our music would be like samba. Like,
you
samba
were always
is our music,
backed
yeah.
into an alley. There was a toughness that pushed you against the wall and you had to push back. And that's where the energy of Gogol Bordello's music really comes from having those boundaries, I guess.
Well, I mean, you kind of describe it in a way as if it's almost like, you know, like a comic book. But that's the reality of, like, my upbringing. I mean, I basically grew up in the Bronx of Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lesser nice part of Bronx. It was basically the extreme outskirt. It was just big construction area with a lot of youth organizations, if you know what I mean.
So to speak. And not far from Chernobyl. So you had to flee at a certain point.
Yeah, of course. It's a kind of always kind of PTSD type of memory. I mean, I was only 13 years old when it happened, and we were not very far away geographically, and when we did not find out about it on the news from official channels of Soviet Union and Soviet radio, we found out about it because my father and I religiously listened to BBC Radio, which broadcasted, and the Voice of America, which broadcasted in Ukrainian and in Russian. And we basically found out about it then. We tuned in to listen to a particular program about, I think what they were talking about, a biography of the Doors and Jim Morrison. It was like an ongoing series. And we tuned in to listen to that and heard that there was some kind of catastrophe on territory of Soviet Union, because much higher levels of radiation were registered in Finland, Sweden, and countries that were, you know, in vicinity of. So, but it seemed to be coming from where the wind is blowing from Soviet Union side. So they said it most likely some kind of atomic disaster took place. So, you know, get your Geiger meters up if you have one and look in into it. And if you can, get out, ski.
That was the vibe.
Well, it wasn't so fast. I mean, yes, we got out of town fast. We basically left immediately to live on a countryside with our Romani side of the family, which led me to discovering, you know, kind of a well-hidden secret of our family that they were Romani. It was also, once again, you know, growing up in Soviet Union, it was had a lot of limitations. And once we got there, 1,000 miles away from Kiev, we learned that our family is a lot cooler than I even thought. We had the Romani blood and, you know, all the kind of talented people in our my mother's side of the family. They were just kind of chilling on a very different kind of vibe. So I kind of really identified with that since then, and you know.
And the wind blew you to America. You settled in the rolling hills of Vermont, and then you came down to the gritty Lower East Side and fell in with the post-punk scene there. And the Gogol Bordello story is storied, to say the least. You've had so much amazing experience, and it's coming through on some new songs, an album called We Mean It, Man, the band's post-punk revenge, it says.
Yeah.
And we're going to hear another example of that in the second tune that Gogol Bordello will perform for us live here at FUV called...
It is called Ignition.
All right, let's fire it up.
Let's rock it.
Was you ahead? before we met. There will be times like now when we'll lick each other's scars. And then we'll be the time we'll disappear like morning stars. The other systems, oh, both sides of the ocean. Couldn't break.
Ignition is the song, aptly named. The energy, the fire is in the studio today. Gogol Bordello visiting 90.7 WFUV. Paul Cavalcante enjoying the company of Eugene Hoots, leader of Gogol Bordello, for literally a lifetime. But you guys keep on aging in reverse, and the music keeps on growing and expanding, and you have come to this moment of releasing an album that involved a producer whose credits include Nick Cave and Gang of Four. And tell us what it was like working with Nick Launay.
Yes, it's interesting. I've finally written a book. It's coming out in October, I think, and it's kind of amazing. I mean, I wrote it actually before making this record. It's just coming out then. And music produced by Nick is already on the first page of that book. So I met Nick probably somewhere like around 2009 or 8 or maybe 10. But the music he's been producing over the years and the kind of spider web of music he woven over the decades is so... Yeah, I feel like every other record in my record collection is produced by Nick Launay, starting with, you know, Birthday Party and Nick Cave's earlier band, and moving on to Gang of Four and PIL, of course, you know, Flowers of Romance, and then, you know, Midnight Oil. I always loved Midnight Oil, you know, and then continuing on with Yeah Yeah Yes and Bad Seeds, making all these amazing albums, and now more currently with Idols and Emil and the Sniffers. And, you know, so it's just kind of, if you just kind of look at those just few releases I just mentioned, Refused, you know, it's a kind of a trajectory like no other of really, really distilled what could be called as post-punk groove and its evolution. Because, of course, you can just throw the term post-punk out of the window. It's just semantics for us to throw around and then forget about it and get back to the music. But chronologically speaking, it is a useful term because I wasn't there when original punk happened. Like, I was a child, mm-hmm. you know. And chronologically speaking, most of the music that I love actually happened in post-punk playground. I mean, all of it, for me, you know, it's with starting with PIL and whatever and hardcore and techno. All of it is kind of just forms of post-punk, you know, and it's a really kind of a fertile land to melt down all those elements because I'm a cross-pollinator and I've always been like that. It's just the way I grew up, like, was I was just go and hang out with people at the hardcore show and then go to an electronic show and then go to an art studio, you know, of my uncle and then go to, to see some band trying to do some kind of King Crimson thing back in Kiev. And so it kind of continued on same way here. And the only way I thought finally to bring it all together was to make an album with Nick Launay, because he's so versatile and So in touch with all those layers of post-punk, from Gang of Four all the way down to more, you know, more synthesized way.
He must have rolled up his sleeves and said, all right.
Oh, we had a blast.
We got a live one in here.
We had a blast.
Here's this band that always brought it together.
I conceived the album as a collaboration with Nick and his partner, Adam Greenspan. They worked together a lot on many records that you hear, you know, Idols and Emil and the Sniffers and so on and so forth. Refused record that they did together. They work as a team. It's funny because we were making a record with Victor van Vugt, who also worked with Nick Cave on the Murder Ballads and The Good Son and a couple other records. And that's our first time when I met Nick Lowney right around that time at a party, instantly connecting, obviously, on our aesthetic matters. And we kind of hit it off. And in fact, the hang was so good, I felt like we already made the record, you know, except we didn't. So now is the perfect time to make it, because that was exactly the kind of material we were looking at. And I thought, hey, this is the time. So I called Nick and, you know, we found it was hard to pin the time, actually, too, because we tour so much and Nick is probably the most sought out producer in the world, actually, if you really really looking into it. He's finally nailed the time and made it here in New York in the Rift Studios in Williamsburg.
And all of the elements came together and it all added up to a record which is appropriately titled We Mean It, Man.
Yeah.
Not just the fact that your group members come from many disparate places and are a collection of people who have ties to other worlds.
Yeah, we didn't run through all the members, but if we would to continue, Erica Mancini is, she's from Chicago, but you know, her family's with roots in Argentina, so she's bringing in accordion and a stack of synthesizers, you know, with a bit of that vibe of, Astor Piazzolla, if we would need accordion vibes. You
know? All things that Joy Division never really considered back in the day. It's almost like you identified these early punk pioneers. They gave permission to everybody else to go crazy and take it to unimaginable places.
Yeah, Susie, you know, and the Banshees for sure, yeah. and Joy Division for sure. I mean, they kind of created a new version of a kind of new portal of just instrumentation and distilling things to ultimate minimalism and just having absolutely extravagant results.
And that's really at the core of what alternative music
really
is. It's not a brand name. It's not a marketing strategy. It is now...
It's less is more.
It's less is more.
Sorry, I didn't mean to break it off, but because I'm kind of flying here on riffing on things that you're bringing up.
Make me feel included like a musician, even though I can't play, but we're riffing.
Well, we're riffing because, you know, post-punk revenge, I mean, I was doing an interview a couple of days ago, somebody from UK, and they're like, Eugene, who revenge against who? And I was like, against me, because, you know, less is more is a kind of a thing you learn first day in art school. And I certainly learned it from my painter uncle back in the day, you know. But that's theory. Once you get to punk rocking it out, more is more. And so look at Gogol Bordello, you know. It's a, you know, it's an orchestra, almost an orchestra. And it's definitely not less is more. But I guess this is kind of my pilgrimage to that theory that, you know, let's boil it down. And even though in practice more is more, less is more, you know, I mean, I was always attracted to that idea. I just needed to make my own way to it and not just take it for granted from the art book.
Well, we've got the song We Mean It, Man, in the queue, so to speak, as your band is about to play it and blow the roof off of FUV Studio A. And I'll leave you with one thought before we go into that tune that to me is kind of the takeaway of your experience and this whole timeline that we've been drawing here, because you said it's valuable to say post-punk just to be able to put a notch on the timeline and orient people. Where does this happen? Think about this. In the 50s, the birth of rock and roll, Elvis, Chuck Berry, Little Richard, etc. This is about 5 years.
Carl Perkins,
all the rockabilly, very basic music comes out of country and folk. Then comes the whole British era, you know, and the Beatles lasted 7 or 8 years. The Rolling Stones are still going today, but they've evolved so many times. They're like Gogo Bordello on steroids in some respect. But there's the English period. Mm-hmm. And then we move along the timeline. We get to 50. 50 years ago in America in 1975 and 76, CBGBs and all of the beginnings of punk are happening. And since then, this body of alternative rock has been the rest of the whole story of rock. The largest share of it is that period of time that we think of as post-punk. It still hasn't stopped. And you're still pushing it as far as it could go conceptually.
Yeah, and not to forget metal. Yes, which is very important. No matter how you slice it, there's no way around it. Metal remains to be important and very vital.
All of that.
Yeah, and I mean, even I Mean It, Man, it's very metallic. Yeah, I never lost the excitement of like thrash metal, you know, of early stages of it when bands like, you know, Exodus and Exciter and all were kind of just figuring it out, like before Slayer. And Slayer is amazing, and but
you wrap it in melody, and it's just like this confection, this wonderful sweet and sour thing.
Well, no, actually, riffage is enough for me most of the time.
Yeah,
You
just
shred. Yeah, I mean, I love melody. You know, I have amazing respect and for melody, and I do chime in that category here and there. But I think that like one of the most, I just have to say that biographically, like probably one of the most exciting, unerasable memories of my life is metal and going to see first metal shows. And it's just nothing like it, you know, when you're like 13 years old and you go in the room with people who are just consumed by these maniacal unison riffs and there's some degree of virtuosity, and then you go backstage and it's just everybody's just so full of adrenaline. It's just another level of being, you know. And then punk usually comes later, you know. But I felt like that excitement for metal never really left my bloodstream, you know.
All right. Well, all that excitement is crammed into "We Mean It, Man," title song from the brand new album by our guests Gogol Bordello.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
People apart. Realize anything, anyone that's bringing the people apart. Scrutinize anything, anyone that's bringing the people apart. And clog it once again.
That was Gogol Bordello performing and in conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to the band for joining us in our studio and to Knitting Factory Management. Thanks to our WFUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara, Aaron Merriman, and Stacey Tran. Our FUV live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producer for this episode was Liv Grant. Megan Suma is our executive producer. Our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV live sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist, band, record, or song. Episodes drop every Monday. Please rate and review the show if you like what you hear so other music lovers can find it. You can also catch audio and video of the FUV Live Sessions on WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host, Paul Cavalcante.